come back.
Good afternoon, Rabbi Yossi. Be'ez Hashem, we will begin our review for spring semester of 2024 of Contemporary Halacha. We'll go through a number of the shiurim. The goal today is not to cover everything because we won't be able to. I'll try to cover at least half of the shiurim. I'm not going to be covering the ones that I taught. I don't think I'll be able to chazer more effectively than the ones that I taught. So the ones that I taught, I think I did one or two. I did two. Mechiras Chavos and Yichud. So I will not review those. You could, I assume you heard me. The goal of my chazering is not just to say everything again. The goal is often that every shiur usually has like three, four, or five main points. When you listen to the shiur, you don't realize that they're chunked into sections. My goal today is to sort of make you realize that every shiur has a section, has a chunk, and I'll clearly delineate what section is finished, and now we'll begin a new section within each given shiur. So hopefully, I'll give you a format when you learn and when you chazer, you'll tell us, oh, that's in this section, that's in that section, that's in that section. Each section would, you know, presumably be a potential question. So it'll be easier to have the material of each of the shiurim organized rather than just repeating the material. So the first shiur that I'd like to chazer is Tumas Kohanim that Rabbi Konigsberg gave. And the first thing we have to know is that there are three types of Tumas Kohanim for the Kohen Zasu to contract, and that's Tumas Mace, Tumas Maga, and Tumas Ohel. Tumas Maga, Masa, and Ohel. Now, there's no shaila that a Kohen is usher to be Matami, even to a guy, when it comes to Maga and Masa. The shaila that exists is there Tumas Ohel for a Mace Akum? And that's Machlokas in the Tanoim and the Rishonim and the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. So the Ramah, I'm sorry, I'll start with the Shulchan Aruch, is Machmir, that we do assume that there's Tumas Ohel by a Mace Akum. And the Ramah says, Meikra Hadin is Mekel, that there's no Tumas Ohel by a mace, but even so, the Ramah himself says you should be machmir. Now, there's an interesting, so the first section that we'll talk about is a possibility to permit a Kohen to go to medical school to attend anatomy class. How can we say that? We can say that based on the Dogam Ravah. Dogam Ravah says the following cheshbon. There's a discussion called Tumah B'chibur. That means if I'm touching a mace with my right hand, I could touch another mace. If I'm a Kohen, I'm already touching a mace with my right hand, I could touch another mace with my left hand, because I'm not being Mosef Tumah. What happens if I touch the mace this morning? Could I touch another mace in the afternoon? So it's not going to be Mosef Tumah al Tumah. So that's a machlokas Rambam and Raivad. Rambam says it's Osir, and the Raivad says, since you're not delaying the Tara process even one day, because the first day is already knocked off because you were touching a mace early in the day, so there's no problem with touching a mace later on. If that's the case, we are all living in a state of Tumah, and every day we're worried that we became Tumah. So every day that we live nowadays, we're choshish that we become Tumah Lameis, and therefore to become Tumah again, according to the Raivad, might be okay, because anyway we're Tumah. So if we're Tumah to this morning, so what's the problem? If a Kohen now wants to go to an anatomy lab and become it again, that's the Raivad who might permit becoming Tumah. But we don't pass like the Raivad. However, says the Dogam Ravava, we could say a Svek Sveka as follows. We mentioned just 2 minutes ago that Tumas Ohel for a guy is subject to Machlokas. And we have another Machlokas. If you're already Tamei, to become a Tamei a second time is also a Machlokas. So it says the Dogam Ravava, maybe you could apply a Svek Sveka. Safek, that maybe Tumas Ohel for a guy is not Matamei at all. And even if it's Matamei, maybe we pass like the Raivid, that once you're Tumah already, because we all live in a state of Tumah, then it's not Asr to become Tumah, to contract Tumah a second time. If that would be the case, you could use this Svek Sveka to permit a Kohen to attend an anatomy lab, not to touch, but to be in the same room. So that potentially could be a Heter to allow a Kohen to go to medical school, to go to dental school. The problem is that there are a few problems. Number one, that this Raivid is not really someone who we could rely on. That Raivid is a way out Das Yachid. Number two, even the Raivid, A, might have been Chozer in the different Sefer of the Raivid, and C, even when the Raivid said that you could be Mosef Tumah al Tumah, so if you touched it this morning, you could touch Tumah again, that might just have meant that you don't get Malkus, but not that it's actually Mutter. So therefore, Ramosha comes out and says, to conclude this piece, Ramosha says that you cannot use this Dogam Ravava to allow a Kohen to become Tameh. And once the Ramosha says, points this out, he says, look, even though you have a mitzvah to save lives, you don't have a mitzvah to go to medical school so that you could save lives. You only have a mitzvah if you're already a doctor to save lives, but you don't have a mitzvah to learn how to you don't have a mitzvah to become rich to get stuck. You don't have to have learn to medical skills to save lives. Similarly, we have Jewish doctors who are not Kohanim. And we have Goyish doctors. So on all those counts, Ramash says, there's no heter for a Kohen to go to medical school. Okay, let's go to the next point. What about a Kohen doing Bikur Cholim? So here we have, besides the issue of being on the same floor as the mace, we have another issue called Sof Tumalatzes, which is a question if it's Daraisa or Darabanan. Let's assume for now that maybe it's Darabanan. It's not clear. What's Sof Tumalatzes? That even if there's no tumma flowing through the walls, through the halls of a hospital, because let's say a mace died in his room or her room. If you close the door, then the tumma stays there. It doesn't continue in the rest of the hallway and under the rest of the roof. However, if that route will be the route through which the body will be taken out, so Chazal, or Halacha Moshe Mesinai of Sof Tumalatzes, sees as though the mace is there in the hallway or in the doorway or in the elevator where it will eventually come out later, even though right now there isn't any tumma there. And therefore, if you're going to be in a hall, let's say there's the door of the morgue is closed, but you're in a other side of the building where they're going to have to take the body from the morgue through that room or through that elevator or through that doorway, then you can't even be in that other part of the doorway. However, there's a tzad lahakel if we assume that the mason in a hospital follow rov, assume by following rov, the mason in a hospital are rov akum. So we could have a sora lahakel based on the following Yeshua's Yaakov. He says, maybe the din, why is there a din that you see now, sof tumalatzes, that you already see now as though the mace is gonna come out through here? He's not here now. Why? What kind of din is this? It's because it's a chiv kavura. So chiv kavura is mechayev that the mace is gonna go out. So he's definitely gonna come out. But a guy, there's no chiv kavura on a guy. So who's to say that the mace is gonna come out? There's no chiv to take the mace out. So therefore, if the mace is in that room and I'm walking through this hallway or this elevator, nothing is mechayev the mace to come here. Oh, so if that's the case, by a guy where there's no chiv of taking the mace out, and if we assume that Sof Tumalatzes itself might only be a Din Rabbanon, and Rosh Hashanah points out maybe Tumas Ol of a guy is itself a Chumra, maybe we could be Mekel to allow Sof Tumalatzes not to be concerned with Sof Tumalatzes when we're dealing with Rov Akum. That's the section of Sof Tumalatzes. There's another issue of visiting a Chola, and that is that there could be skeletons in closets, literally, and that is definitely the case, and that, you know, if rooms are open, then the tumma will travel throughout the room, throughout the hallways. Ramosha, when he talks about visiting sick people, a Kohen visiting the sick, in a hospital, he says that you could rely, a person could visit, a Kohen could visit a hospital to be maker like the Ramah, who holds a Me'ikr Hadin. There's no tumas ohel for an akum. So if it's rov akum, b'shas hatchak going could walk into a hassle. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nehiyeh Bedvarav. Let's talk about the next point. The next point is a pregnant eishes kohen. Another Torah says, Amor lahem that lahatzir gdol ma'al katan. You can't even have a katan. A katan kohen, a male kohen katan, male katan kohen, contract tumma. So let's say you have a pregnant woman, an ashes kohen, and in her belly is a kohen or a kohenus. So if it's a kohenus, that's fine. But if it's a kohen, that's going to be a problem. She should not be able to go into a levaya, to a cemetery. But says the rokeach, maybe it should be mutter for a pregnant ashes kohen to yes enter a levaya or a cemetery. Because we have a svek sveka. What's the svek sveka? Maybe it's in the keva. Nekeva Kohen, she's now doesn't have an Isser Tumma. And even if it's a Zachar, maybe he'll be a Nefa. Maybe he'll maybe he's not going to be a Ben Kayama. So based on that, you have a Sekseik, it should be mutter for a pregnant Ashes Kohen to go to a Levaya, to go to a cemetery. Frektim Wagen Avraham, what do you mean? Either way, it should be mutter, even without your Sekseik, because we have a rule in Hilchas Tumma called Tahara Blua, that if you have something that is enveloped, ensconced, surrounded by an exterior, like a baby inside of the mommy's belly, so that shouldn't become tameh. So why did the rokeach have to say svek sveka? Asked the Magen Avraham. After all, this should already have a heter of tahara blua. So Reb Chaim Oz, the Achiezer, says a yisod which we're going to use in two or three ways. The first way we're going to use it is here to explain why the rokeach had to yes find the svek sveka, and that is because you're right. As far as the halachs of tumah are concerned, there might not be tuma for this baby because it's tarabua. But the iser of a kohen contracting tumas mace is not an iser becoming tamei mamish, says the Achiezer, says Uchai Mozer, but rather of kiruv al the tuma, as we'll explain more in a minute. And therefore, even though technically the fetus won't become tamei because it's a tarabua, but since the fetus would be in a cemetery, close proximity at a levaya, close proximity to a mace, it would still be usur, even though technically it's not a real din tuma. It's not a real, the baby's not really going to become tuma because there is the heter tarablua. That's why the rokeach had to come up with the sex sveka to be mitaher, the mother to go to the semitah. You just have to point out that nowadays, when there is an ultrasound and you could find out if it's a boy or a girl, you don't have the sex sveka of the rokeach because there's no suffix zacha, suffix nekeva. So the sex sveka falls away anyway. But let's.
You go over that. Again?
Yeah, Ruchai Mozer, let me tell you the next application, and that will make clear the first one. Ruchai Mozer could be applied in another way. That the Isser of Tumas Kohen is not to become Tame, but rather is to be close to a mace, as follows. There's a halacha, I'll say two other ways where we see this concept of Ruchai Mozer. There's a halacha called Cherev Harehu Kechalol, that a piece of metal is like a corpse in terms of being like Aviyavo Satuma. If you had a scalpel that touched, or if the surgeon was wearing a watch and the watch touched the mace at the when a surgery had gone bad, and that watch is in the house, for the next 50 years that surgeon has a watch in his house, he can never invite a kohen into his house. Because the watch is there, and the watch is cheref harehu kecholol, and a kohen could come into his living room, dining room, and down the hall in the kohen's office, he has his watch there, it's going to become tummy. It's a metal watch that touched the corpse. So, how come we never heard of such a thing that a kohen can't walk into any building that has a piece of metal that ever touched a mace? It should be cherev harehu kecholol. So, Ruchai Mozer said the same idea. Even though hilchos tuma, yes, there would be a tuma, but for the isser of a kohen is not just to become tamei. The isser of a kohen is only to not come close to a dead body. And here, coming in the same building as a watch or a scalpel that touched the dead body, that's not coming close to a mace, and therefore there would not be an Isser for the Kohen. Again, we're limiting the Isser of Tumas Kohen is not an Isser to become Tamei per se, but rather an Isser to come close to Misa. I'll tell you a third example. Third example that Rosh Hashanah always likes to speak about is if you have an airplane flying over a Kohen in an airplane flying over a grave, 1,500 feet or 1,500 meters above a grave. So theoretically, that's Tumas Ohel, right? The Kohen is being Ma'ahil over a kever. That should be a problem, Hilchos Tuma. Says Reb Chaim Ozer, or says Reb Shechter, that won't be a problem. Why not? Because the Isser for a coin is not just to become Tummy, because he would become Tummy. He's on top, he's 1,500 meters directly in a straight line over a cemetery. But says Reb Shechter, that's not a problem, because the problem is to become close, to have a kirva to a mace, and if you're 1,500 meters in the air, that's not close to a mace, and therefore the Kohen can go in an airplane, according to Reb Shechter, above a cemetery. Let's now, okay, so we just have three applications of Ruchai Mozer's Yesod of this, that Tumas Kohenim is not actually becoming Tamei, but rather coming in close proximity to a mace. Let's go to the next point. And what about a car? Could a Kohen sit in a car and drive into or over a cemetery? So let us suggest that maybe the car could be Chotzis Befei HaTumah. If you're in a box, Gemara talks about you're in a migdal, you're in a box. The box keeps the tumah outside of you and doesn't come into the car. So the first problem is that the car will not be chotzis mipnei tumah, and that's because a car is metal, and metal does not serve as a protection from a resistor to tumah. It allows the tumah to go straight through the metal, and the person will become tummy inside the car. That's A. And B, there's a halach called ohel zarek. Ohel zarek lo shmei ohel. So even though he's in an ohel, but that ohel will not protect, and that box that he's contained within will not protect him because it's an ohel zarek, because it's moving. Others argue it's not an ohel zarek because it's rolling on the floor. That's a side point. When we spoke about an airplane over a kever, we could possibly have, besides the heter that we gave before from Chaim Ozer, there could be another heter. If a coin's in an airplane and he's traveling over a cemetery, the bottom of the airplane, the belly of the airplane, should be chotzis mipnei tumah from below. Will that work? So we're going to have the same problems. Number one, is the metal of an airplane going to contract toma? Metal can't be chotzeis, because metal is mekabel toma. In order to be chotzeis b'nei toma, it has to be something that's not mekabel toma, like plastic. But is metal mekabel toma? So the metals in the Torah, the six metals listed in the Torah, kesef, bedil, oferes, zahav, nechoshes, those definitely are mekabel toma. But a plane is made out of aluminum. That is a metal that they did not have in the olden days. Is aluminum mekabel toma? That is a machlokas gra, who says only these are metal, and therefore an aluminum plane will indeed not be considered metal and can be chotzis mepnei hatumah, as opposed to Tiferes Yisrael, who says anything that has metallic properties are mekabel tumah, and therefore cannot be chotzis, and therefore if you're in the belly of a plane, since it's aluminum, you will be mekabel tumah, and that would be a problem for a kohen. Of course, we mentioned the Achiezer just a minute ago, there's another heter, that even if you lose this heter, that the plane, yes, is mekabel tumah, maybe the Isser is not going to apply because the coin is so far away from the dead body. So like the Achiezer's Yisod, it's not going to be a problem of, even though there's perhaps might be Kabbalah's Tumah, but there's no Kirvel Tumah, and that the Achiezer says would not be Usser for a Kohen. Finally, the last point in this shir is, could you have a dead Jewish body in the cargo? We're not talking about going over a cemetery, we're talking about in the plane itself. What would we suggest? Take a box, put the dead body in a box that's not Mekabel Tumah. That would be chotzeis b'nei hatumah. Put it in a plastic or a silicone box, which is what they do. And that would be chotzeis. The problem is, some posts can point out, maybe this box is flying, literally. It's flying in the air. So therefore, maybe we'll have a din of ohel zarek, and ohel zarek, lo shmei ohel. And therefore, it doesn't have the capacity to be chotzeis b'nei hatumah. So we could argue that, wait, it's flying, but guess what? You know, the person is flying on top of it. The person is, you know, you have the cargo hold. On top of the cargo hold, you have seat 24C, where the Kohen is sitting, C for Kohen, and he's sitting right on top of the dead body. So, Ohel Zarek, Lo Shmei Ohel, because the dead body in the plane is flying, but guess what? The guy right on top of it is flying equally, so compare it relative to the dead body, he's not flying, he's stationary. So that would be a question if we consider him to be, if we consider this to be an Ohel Zarek or not. The best thing is for a Kohen not to fly in a plane that has a mace inside of it. That would be ideal. Okay, that was the first year. Any questions on Tumah? Okay, let's move on. We're going to do a Beis Din. This is Rabbi Reis's Shiur on Beis Din. The Torah says, Eila Mishpatim Asher Tosim Lefnehem. Lefnehem means these are the Mishpatim that you should put in front of the Jewish Dayanim, the Elohims, the Jewish Dayanim, Shem Chol. So that means you're not allowed to take a case in front of a arkos, in front of a non-Jewish court. Why? There are two separate reasons. Number one, there's a concern that you're miyakir shem elilim, and number two, which I'll show you the nafkamin in a minute, it's a chilul Hashem. What's the miyakir shem elilim? Miyakir shem elilim is the fact that you're not going to the Torah authorities, you're going to the secular authorities, or the government authorities, or the pagan authorities. So that would be, even if you have a goyish court, a secular court, but they are willing to follow Choshen Mishpat, they have advisors like the Jewish advisors who will guide them and they'll follow halacha, but you're taking your case to a non-Jewish court or a secular court. It would still be aser. Alternatively, let's say the issue is the second part, the Chil Hashem. Chil Hashem in the sense of Meirim Yad, the Lashon of the Ram is Meirim Yad v'Torah Smosh. You're saying that Torah can't deal with this case. So what's the nafkamina of this answer? Let's say you would go to a Jewish court and say, I want to be governed by New York state law. So even though you went to Jewish court, but when the plaintiff and the defendant come and say, we want to be governed by New York state law, you're saying Torah law can't deal with our situation. So although you came to Jews, but you're saying that they can't deal with, Torah can't deal with your situation. So that's what we have two reasons, and it's going to be usser, whether you go to a Jewish court or a secular court, if you go to a Jewish court to have secular law, that's usser, or you go to a secular court and have Jewish law, it will still be usser. You have to have a Jewish court, do Jewish law. Very good. Now, what happens if there's a drasha that says the following? Lifnehem, there are two drashas in Chazal. Lifnehem below lifnei hediotos, you can't go to somebody who's unqualified to dan, and also lifnehem below lifnei akum, you can't go to a goyish court. The Ramban says there's a nafkamina between these two drushes. Lefneim velo lefnei goyim, that is an iser to be go in front of a goyim, even if both parties are saying we're both accept, we both are willing to go to goyim, it's still going to be aser. It's masa masha kos batorah. Even if both the parties are willing to go to court, it's aser. However, lefneim velo lefnei hetyotos, says Raman, if the two parties are both willing to go to a Jewish hedyot, then it is mutter for the Jewish hedyot to be dan them, even if he's a hedyot, only because the two parties were willing. So there's a little bit of a difference between the two drushes of lefnei v'lo lefnei hedyotos or lefnei v'lo lefnei hagoyim. There's a Rashba that is the source for many halachos. We'll talk about prenups based on this. We'll also talk about scenarios where you could go to, that where you could take a person to court. The Rashba had a very difficult tshuva where he had the following story. The story was a father gave his daughter a big dowry and had a baby, and the baby died, and his daughter died, and the yorish was the husband, his son-in-law, who he had for a very short amount of time, for a year, is now going to take this gigantic, gigantic dowry. And it's going to leave, and he'll go marry some other woman and move wherever he's going to move. And the father of the girl felt that it wasn't fair that this son-in-law should take all of his money, and therefore wanted to follow the law of the land. And the son-in-law said that according to halacha, I'm the yoresh, and therefore it all goes to me. So the Rashba has a very complicated tshuva, where he discusses, do we follow the law of the land? And the Rashba says, what do you mean? It's Hilchas Yerusha. If you follow the law of the land, you're going to undermine all of Hilchas Yerusha, by definition. And the Rambam, and the Rashba over there, seems to have a lot of soser dikka. He sort of soser himself in his Lashonis. He says, you shouldn't copy the Goyim, but you could be Mechayev, but if you're dealing with another person, you can Mechayev whatever you want, because it's Tanai V'davar Sheva Mamon. So there are different Lashonos of the Rashba go in different directions, and I'll present about 5 or 6 or 7 mahalchim how to learn the Rashba. What is the Rashba saying? When could you incorporate the secular law, or maybe not going to a court, secular court, but when could you use secular law to govern, or the law of the land to govern a case, and when do you have to be bound by the Torah law, as in the case I just described to you? So the Beis Yosef says that as long as there are Dayone Goyim, the two parties can agree to follow some of Dinei Goyim. So if you go to a Jewish court, and the Dayanim are Goyim, the two parties can say, we want to follow in this aspect, to just say we'll be governed by secular law, that's not okay. But to say we want this area of secular law, that would be okay. That's one mahal. That's Mahal Beis Yosef. Yeah. Beis Yosef says that Dayanei Goyim are Aser, to stand for our cause is Aser, but Jewish parties could agree to go to a Jewish Beis Din and to follow a certain secular law. Another way to see what the maskana of this Rashba is, what's your motivation? Is your motivation because you want to, this law happens to be convenient that you want to adopt for your case, for your interaction, your partnership, you want to apply this law? Or is it that you just want to be like the Goyim? If you want to be like the Goyim, so then we're not willing for you to be bound by the laws of the Goyim. If you just want, this is a good case, a good, you want this law, the local practice, to be binding, so then it would be. Okay, another answer is that for a whole community to follow the laws of the Goyim, that would be us. But if an individual or two parties want to stipulate between themselves to follow the laws of a guy, of the Goyisha laws, just for the two of them, that would be mutter, as long as it's not a broad acceptance of a community. The Zalman Nechemia Goldberg says the Isser is only if you try to uproot a whole body of law, like all of Hilchas Yerusha. But if you want to just one point, like I'm going to have according to Halacha, you're supposed to work from dawn till night. We want to make an agreement that you're going to work for 40 hours a week. So you're not trying to adopt all of the worker law, worker compensation laws, all the worker laws and union laws and labor laws in your contract. You're just taking one point, the 40-hour work week. You want to adopt that, that's okay. Another suggestion of what the Rashba is telling us is that the problem is not following secular law per se, but it's specify the name of the secular law. If you want to say, this contract will be governed by, you know, statute 192.192b, that's a problem. But if you say, this law will be governed with the following idea, and you copy and paste whatever it said in statute 192b and put it in your contract, so you're not saying we want to follow that state law, you're just saying we want to have this idea governing our contract, but you're not specifying it as a state law, that's going to be totally fine. So that's with that said, that's why the prenup that Rabbi Willig was very involved with composing says that the parties agree, or if they choose to sign this, the parties agree to follow distribution laws of equity or equitable distribution laws, or they don't say we're going to follow New York law. It happens to be New York law has this equitable distribution law when you split assets of a couple. But so we're not going to say we're going to follow the New York's law. They're going to divide their assets based on equitable distribution, which is the same point as the New York state law, but they're just not specifying it as state law. They're just saying this is what we want to follow. Okay. That's as far as the different points from the Rashba, when a person can incorporate a secular law into their own contracts. Next point, it's important, a Beis Din, before it adjudicates, would be very wise if the Beis Din would have a signed arbitration agreement. I had a case, somebody came to me last week, somebody was swindled, two firm guys, one was an investor and offered to invest and took a lot more money than he was supposed to, and the victim took him to Beis Din, to the RCA, and he had a binding arbitration agreement, which means that the two parties agree that whatever the decision of the Beis Din will be, both parties submit to that law, and they're legally bound by signing the arbitration agreement before the diun. They're bound to whatever the maskana will be. So now that the winner of the case has a binding arbitration agreement and the psak of the Beis Din that decided that perpetrator owes $104,000, the victim can now take this court, take this document, these two documents, the psak with the binding arbitration agreement, to the courts, and the courts will enforce it. And really, the person went to Beis Din. The courts are just enforcing it, which we'll talk about in just a minute. In Eretz Yisrael, there is something called Mishpat Ivri. It is not Jewish law. It is Ottoman, Turk, and all kinds of other things. So, is that okay to be a lawyer, judge, working within the parameters of Mishpat Ivri? So many, many, many poskim say that it would be problematic to be a judge of Mishpat Ivri. Let's see what the arguments for and against would be. So the argument, perhaps a weak argument, that would allow Mishpat Ivri was suggested based on the findings. So Rashba writes that if you don't have qualified, let's say you live in a small town, and there's an argument, so they hire, you know, the three wisest men in the town, the barber and the mechanic and the gas attendant in the town, you know, in these small hick towns, those are the wisest men in town, they will sit down and be the Beis Din. So that's called Erkos Shebesuria. And the halacha is that as long as they base the decisions on their common sense, they're allowed to paskin, even not like halacha, because they don't know the halacha, and that's all you have. So perhaps that's the, you know, you see, you don't have to follow halacha. You could follow the court that's in the town. There are numerous problems with that as a source, obviously. Number one, that's only when you don't have qualified dayanim. Nowadays, Baruch Hashem, we do have qualified dayanim. B, it's only the Rashba said that they could follow their common sense. But in Israel, the judges are bound not by their own common sense, but by the secular law, that is the Mishpat Ivri, the Israeli law. And they're bound by that. So therefore, the poskim from right to left, all Rav Avadia Yosef, Tzipesa Frank, Rav Herzog, all said that it would be prohibited to follow Mishpat Ivri, and you have to go to a proper Beis Din. Next point. What happens if you're in a very specific area of industry? You're in contracting, you're in diamonds, and you want to go to an arbitration board, an arbitration panel that's specific to your trade. So the halacha is that is permitted, because there they're passing not based on laws, but based on practice in the, you know, the diamond industry has its own, you know, with the accepted practices in the diamond industry. So if you go to an arbitration panel in the diamond industry, you're not going to, it's not government laws that were legislated or that were judged by, you know, by state lawyers, state legislators or judges. Rather, it's people in the industry who know how what the minhag hasochem is, and that, Rukvega says, is mutter. In terms of Stam going to an arbitrator just to say, let's go to an arbitration panel. American Board of Arbitrators. We have a machlokas, we have a partnership, we have our neighbors, we have machlokas between each other. I bang my car into Yorka. Let's just, instead of going to Bez, let's go to an arbitration panel. So that would, the Shach says, if he's going to just rule according to his common sense, that would be okay. But if he's bound to some kind of law system, that would be aser. Okay. What I'm going to finish this shiur with is a bunch of scenarios. We'll see how many it will be. A bunch of scenarios where it will be permitted for a person to go to court or for Bezin to send a person to court. The most common one probably is where the Nitva, the Torei, wants to go to Bezin, and the Nitva says, no, I'm not going to Bezin. So then the Torei is allowed to take him to court. Ideally, he should get a hechter from the Erkos. I'm in the middle right now of a case in my neighborhood with a woman who made a big mistake, and she filed for divorce first in the courts, and then a year or two later went to Bezin to ask to get a get, and that was a big mistake. You should never have to be involved with these things, but if you are ever speaking to somebody who is just about to file for divorce, tell them to first go to Beis Din and then do whatever else they have to then file, because if they go to the courts first, that could be very complicated as far as their rights to get a seer from Beis Din and try to get a get. Okay, that's just an important thing for you to know as future Rabbanim. Always have them go to Beis Din first or get halachic guidance before they just say, I have to file for divorce. Unless someone's in danger, that's a different story, but that you could just file for an order of protection, not a file for a divorce. Okay. There are two sources in Shas that give a heter to go to Arkos in specific situations. There's a Mishnah that says that a get me'usa, when you're allowed to be ma'asa a man to give a get, the Bezin could do that. But Ovdei Kochavim, if they hit him and say, I say, Mashi Yisrael Osin, Metzavim Lecha, that's okay. So you could use the court system as a way to enforce what the Beis Din instructs the person to do. That's one source where you're sort of using the courts as a yoda arichta of the Beis Din. And number two, there's a Gemara in Bava Kamma that says, when you call out to your friend and he doesn't answer you, throw a wall against him, and the Rush says that means if you take him to Beis Din and he doesn't respond, you bring him to court. Again, the point is that you're not going to courts first, you're going to the Beis Din first, and then they are giving a heter to use the court as their an extension of their hands, so to say. So the first scenario where you're allowed to ask, where you're allowed to go to court, is if the nitva refuses, and therefore you have no choice. Next, let's say a person. Yeah.
Sorry, repeat the first case in the Mishnah.
There were two scenarios. One was the case in Gittin, and one was the case in Bava Kamma. The case in Gittin was a case of a get, where the Gemara says that if it is a get me'usa, meaning a permitted get me'usa, you can't have the goyim enforce it, unless the goyim can't say, give a get. But if the goyim could say, Asei Mashi Yisrael Omer Mecha. So the goyim could be used like the enforcers of the Beis Din. Next scenario, let's say somebody was taken to Beis Din. I'm sorry, someone was taken to court. And in court he lost, but he was forced into court. He didn't want to go to court. Could he now take the guy who beat him to Beis Din? Will Beis Din sit and hear a case that a defendant was forced into court to defend? So it really depends on what the situation was. When the person was schlepped into court against his will, did he fight and say, I don't want to go to Beis Din, and they just ignored him? Or when he was taken to court, he hired a lawyer, and he, fought in court, and then now he lost, he wants to say, oh, maybe I could do better in a Beis Din. So if that's the case, then we're not going to give him his second chance in Beis Din. But if he made a mechav from the outside, then maybe he would be able to go to Beis Din afterwards. Okay? Another case is if it's Yadua. This is also a case I have now. If somebody is known that he wouldn't go to Beis Din. I have a court case against somebody who's not religious, doesn't appreciate Batei Din, a totally secular Jew, so halachically I have to go to Beis Din. But I know he's going to, a rabbinic tribunal is inviting me to court, what is this heebie-jeebie, they're going to you know, do some magic on me? What's that all about? So such a case, the Kesef Kodeshim says that somebody who wouldn't go to Bezin, you might be able to go straight to court. But that's, you shouldn't rely on that. You should try to get a hazmana to Bezin. If you refuse it, then you have the right. They'll give you a heter to go to court. Another scenario where you could go to Bezin, if there's nothing, where the Bezin doesn't have to make a decision, where the court doesn't have to make a decision, the court just has to enforce something. So for example, the court, if Bezin ruled on something, so you could go to court because Bezin ruled, and the court is just enforcing the document, the contract. The court is just making things happen. Another case where you could go straight to a court is if it's a chov barur. So there's no question, like the parent owes tuition. They signed the document, they said they're going to pay $15,000 a year, they owe the money, and they didn't pay at the end of the year. So there's no question, there's no ifs, ands, or buts. If there is, then you have to go to Bezin. But if it's a chov barur, they just owe money and just haven't paid, you could go to collect the debt in court. Finally, you could go to a court if you're not asking them to actually judge a case, but to do an injunction. For example, you have a partner, and you're worried that you're getting into fights. You're worried that he's going to take the money, withdraw the money from the bank, and put it in a Swiss bank account. So you need an injunction, an equal, to stop. You know, to stop. You can't touch anything. So there, the Bezin can't do that. So you could go to a court because the Bezin anyway can't do that. So go to the court, let them put an injunction. They're not going to, no decisions. Stop the, you know, stop everything in its tracks. Nothing can happen. And the Bezin will, then you could go to Bezin and deal with it slowly without the time pressure. Okay, but both of we just did the hardest shear. I did it purposely and got it done with, so that was the hardest shear. So from now on, it will be easier. Okay, that was Melachas Machsheves. So, talking about Melachas Machsheves, let's talk about Hilchos Chol HaMoed, Melach on Yom Tov. Okay. Any questions about Beis Din? None at all. Great. Hilchos Chol HaMoed, there's a Pirkei Avos says Hamavaza es Hamoados El Chelak Olam Haba. It doesn't say Hamachalal es Hamoados. It says Hamavaza es Hamoados. Talking about Chol HaMoed, and you see that there has to be a kavod, and therefore if you do bizui, it's not okay. What's kavod or bizui of Chol HaMoed? Nice clothing, nice food. So Chol HaMoed, you have to have nicer clothing, and you have to have better food. Nice introduction. Now, the main point of this shiur is to figure out whether Malach on Chol HaMoed is Asa Midoraisa or is Asa Midorabanan. Tosfos, I'm sorry, the Gemara Chagiga, Yudches, cites five different sources from the Torah to show that Malach is Asa Chol HaMoed. So it sounds like from the Gemara that it's Asa Midoraisa. I'll give a smattering. One is Eschag HaMatzos Tishma Shivas Yomim. Well, that sounds 7 days, sounds like it includes Chol HaMoed, doesn't it? There's a Kal v'chomer. If the beginning and the end is Aser, so only the middle is Aser. Okay. Kol Malach is Avdo Lo Sazu Shivas Yamim by Sukkos. That sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Torah says don't do work for 7 days. That sounds like it's Daraisa, right? And some other sources. So, simple reading of the Gemara sounds like it's Daraisa. However, Tosis there suggests that all these smathas are all drushes, and he has three proofs to demonstrate that Malach on Chol HaMoed must only be Drabbana. Number one, the fact that there are only four aliyahs and not five aliyahs demonstrate that there's a lower level of Kedusha and therefore demonstrated by the lower level of Isser Malacha. That's one. Point number two is you have Kulas, which we'll speak about momentarily, Litzorech this, Tzorechi Rabim, Dor HaAved. You don't have such dispensations or caveats in Daraisas. It must be Drabbana if you can have such Kulas. And thirdly, the Lashon of the Yerushalmi is klum asru malacha ela lechol velumo Torah. Klum asru, that means they, Chazal, asered malacha on Chol HaMoed, so we should enjoy and learn Torah. So the Lashon of the Yerushalmi is asru, they asered, Chazal asered, so clearly it's drabban. That's Tosfos' conclusion. Now the Beir Halacha happens to collect all the shitas in the Rishonim and comes out with a pretty even 12 on each side. 12 Rishonim say that it's Doraisa, 12 Rishonim say that is Darabanan. I was schmoozing with the Rav just this week, and we were talking to each other about how everybody, every single Rav, every single Yontif, will get at least one Shaila of somebody doing construction on Chol HaMoed. Because again, if you have, again, the size of the shul, if you have 50 people, and construction takes a few months, whatever a person's doing, whether it's small or big, there's got to be one guy in your shul, or at least, who's doing construction. If they're doing construction, they all want to do it on chomer, and everybody has an excuse, and then the contractor said he can't, and the contractor has other jobs, and he's going to do this, and you have to know the halachas, and most of the time, it's going to be aser. If the guy's a guy, usually the contractors are often Jews, and that makes it more halachically problematic, but you have to just know what halacha is. So, the Be'er Halacha brings down a balance of 12 and 12. And so how are we going to understand these leniencies? If you assume that it is indeed Doraisa, how will we understand these leniencies like Tzorech Moed and Dabar Ha'aved and Tzorech Rabbah, which we'll talk about soon? So, one way to understand them is that Masron Hakosav Lachachamim. It is fundamentally Asu Doraisa, but this Isu Doraisa is undefined, and the definition of that Isur Doraisa, the parameters of that Isur, which is indeed Doraisa, is in Chazal's hands to determine. So they say that Tzorchei Moed is Mutter, Tzorchei Rabin, Davar Avid is Mutter, but if it's not a Tzorch Rabin, not a Davar Avid, not a Tzorchei Rabin, then it will be Asur Doraisa. What's Nafkamina, whether it's whether Melacha is Doraisa Dorabana? First of all, people take it much more seriously. But could you apply Shus to Shus from Malka Mitzvah? If it's a Safek, will we say Safek Malacha? Is it Safek Malacha Lahakel? And people don't realize that might be the big machlokas, whether or not you put tefillin on Chol HaMoed, you probably half the clad, half the Shia does, and half the Shia doesn't. If you hold that Malacha is Isser Daraisa, so that's why you wouldn't wear tefillin. If you hold that the Isser Malacha is only Darabanan, then it's not an os, then Yom Tov is not an, Chol HaMoed is not an os, then you would wear tefillin. Fine. Now let's talk about that was the introduction, that was the first point, is it Doraisa Darabanan? Now let's speak about the actual halacha. There are four main things. The way Hilchos Chol HaMoed works is like this. It's also du melacha, except in four scenarios. And you have to figure out if any shah that you get is going to fit into one of those four scenarios. Scenario number one, Davar Ha'aved. Scenario number two, Tzorech Moed. Scenario number three, Poel She'en Lo Ma'yochal, which is not so common, so we're not really going to talk about that. And scenario number four is Tzorchei Rabin.
Who's the uncommon?
Poel She'en Lo Ma'yochal. You have somebody who doesn't have enough food to eat. If you're living, you earn a day's wages. If you're not going to work for 3 days, you're not going to have food. You're not going to be able to buy food for the last days. Yeah.
What was the second one?
Tzorech Moed. Well, we'll talk about all of them in a minute. If I could just go on a tangent and then come back to these four. One important shaila to ask ourselves before we get into those four, we'll come back to them in a minute. So in your on your computers, you could do this more easily. Go back right before these four, which we'll get to in a minute. Go back. I want to talk about tircha. Is the iser of Chol HaMoed malacha or tircha? Meaning, if you come out of the bathroom on the second day of Chol HaMoed, are you allowed to turn off the light in the bathroom? There's no tzorech moed. Why in the world? It should be also. It's a malacha. That's one point. Are you allowed to move from apartment 5A to 5F on Chol HaMoed? You're not doing any malacha. You're just carrying couches down a hallway and carrying bookcases down a hallway. So that's tircha. There's no malacha. So it's a big shaila among the poskim. Is the iser tircha or is the iser malacha? Because to flip on a light has no tircha, but it's a malacha. To carry bookcases and a sofa down a hallway is not a malacha, but it is a tircha. Carrying an unusable tissue in your pocket on Chol HaMoed, where there's no eirum. Is that an iser daraisa? Maybe. If you assume that malacha on Chol HaMoed is daraisa, and there's no tzorech yontif there, that's a malacha. Malacha of hatzad, shalot tzorech yontif. Maybe it'll be aser on the drabbanan because we talk or something like that, but that should be aser. But if you say that this is because there's a tircha, there's no tircha having a tissue in my pocket. I don't wiggle my body and work any harder as I walk or run if there's a tissue in my pocket. So that is a discussion among the poskim, which is worth thinking about. Now let's get into the actual... Oh, one more point before we get into the actual four halachas is it's good to know that the halacha of muktza does not apply, and the various gzeros, like not swimming, not riding on an animal, amila nachri, those also do not apply on Chol HaMoed. Now let's talk about the four principles of when malacha is mutter. So let's talk about Tzorchei Moed. Tzorchei Moed is mutter on Chol HaMoed for a malacha of a hedyot. A malacha is a maisa hedyot. But Tzorech Rab, Tzorech HaMoed is not mutter for a Maisa Uman. Let me explain. If you want to go to Great Adventure or Hershey Park on Chol HaMoed and you have a flat, so everyone knows how to change a flat. So in order to change a flat, you have to change a flat to get to Hershey Park. So it's a Tzorech HaMoed, mutter. Changing a transmission, anyone know how to change a transmission? But you have to get to Hershey Park. Could you take it to Julio's automotive to change your transmission? Right after Shabbos, 7 o'clock, bring it to Julio. It'll be ready by 9:30, and you'll get out by 10 to go to Hershey Park. Usser. Absolutely usser. What do you mean? I need the car to take the kids to Hershey Park. It's usser because it's a Maisa Uman. So a Maisa Hedyot is Mutla Tzorech Moed. A Maisa Uman is usser. The Tzorech Moed.
It's also for you to have someone else.
That is correct. It can't be done for you. Neither you nor a guy. Correct.
What about the other way?
What's the other way?
For the flat tire. Can you get an Uman to change your flat tire?
Yeah, you could get an Uman because it's a Maisa. It's a Maisa Hedyot. Yeah. What he's trying to say is he doesn't know how to change a flat tire.
Exactly.
Just a
little. Maybe don't know how to change a flat tire.
You know, in Eretz Yisrael, I think part of the test is you have to change a flat tire because they don't want you to be stuck. You have a 17-year-old girl, you know, driving right outside Ramallah and just happens to get a flat tire. She's going to be stuck there waiting for AAA, AAA for 4 hours. Not good. So every person has to, as part of the driving test in Israel, is to not change a flat tire. So every girl half your age knows how to change a flat tire. So you want to be a man, learn how to change a flat tire. I think we're just spoiled because we have Chaverim now. So Chaverim to the rescue. Now, when we talk about Maisa Uman, you could ask a Geshmaka Shaila. Is it that the Maisa is a Maisa Uman or the finished product is a Maisa Uman? Nafkamina, a Polaroid picture. Does anyone know what a Polaroid is?
Yes.
Okay, good. I don't want to date myself. You take a picture and the Maisa is not a Maisa Uman, but the end result is a nice, beautiful photograph. So if you assume the Maisa is Asr, it's not a Maisa Uman. If you assume the result is Asr, is a Maisa Uman that it is a Maisa Uman. So that's Machlok and Sigris Moshe. Said anyone could do it, so it's Mutter. But Ryakov Kamenetsky says it has a professional touch and it should be like a Maisa Uman. Maybe one could argue if you have using a computer printer. I don't even know if nowadays that's true. But at least when, maybe 10 years ago, 20 years ago, we could have asked if you have a little sign printed on a computer printer. So any second grader knows how to type a sign on the computer and press print, second or third grader. But once you do it, it comes out, it has a professional touch because it's Arial or Cabria font, whatever, 16 italic, so it looks professional. So that also, you should try to avoid printing. Even if you're going to type on the home, you should try to avoid printing it because the totsa could look, I always feel guilty when I'm printing out my drushes. For the last days of Yontif, everything I do is from printed out before Yontif or before Shabbos. So I always feel a little bit guilty, like I'm being Mekel in Hilchos Chol HaMoed to present my drushes, but maybe I have another head to which we'll talk about in a second.
We're on Paschal Eid promotion in that example?
There's no Amidah L'Minyan. I mean, yeah, you have every right to go like Rav Moshe. If you hold it to Doraisa, it's a Sag Doraisa. I'm saying this, Now, when we talk about the heter for a Maisa Hedyot and an Isser of a Maisa Uman, Litzrach Yantav, there's one exception when even a Maisa Uman is permitted, Litzrach Yantav, and that's Ochel Nefesh, anything that relates to the goof. So let's say you're lucky enough that your wife is a pastry chef and she wants to do her pastry magic to create beautiful, beautiful pastries on Yantav, so that's a Maisa Uman. However, since it's Litzrach Ochel Nefesh, it's an extension of Tzorche HaGoof, it's going to be Mutter. Similarly, and I got the Shaila just this Yantav, a woman who wants to go to a cosmetologist, who wants to go to get her nails, not cut, but nails painted, or her eyebrows, I don't know what it, or some other things that relate to the human body. So this first mission, Moed Katan, says that that's mutter. Oh, but you're going to a professional cosmetologist, you're going to a spa, you're going to wherever, and it's a Maisa Uman. Yes, but a Maisa Uman is, and it's Tzorech Yantif, Maisa Uman is Aser. But if it's a Maisa Uman lit Tzorech HaGuf, then it's going to be mutter. Similarly, you break your glasses. So broken glasses is going to the optometrist and he's going to fix it for you. That's a Maisa Uman. That should be Aser. But since it's a Tzorech HaGuf, it'll make it Mutter. Similarly, calling a plumber is a Maisa Uman. You cannot call a plumber on Yantav. If there's a leak, we'll talk about that in a minute. But in terms of the fact that I need to, have a plumber because I need the sink, that's not necessarily Heter. But if you have, let's say you have seven bathrooms in your house and one bathroom doesn't work, guess what? Six do. That's not sort of, that's not a tzorach haguf. If you have, you know, the eight people in a house with two bathrooms and one doesn't work, see, one bathroom for eight people, that could be a little bit tight, you know, before Shacharis and, you know, 11 o'clock at night and, you know, get ready for Shabbos. So then, if one bathroom breaks, so then it's a tzorach haguf. So when you're doing a ma'is u'ma, which is also even tzorach yadav, but since it's permanent tzorach haguf, it will become mutter. Then, let's talk about another little bit about tzarech. Even if, in terms of going to doctors and dentists and checkups, it's smart not to schedule checkups for Chol HaMoed. If a person is in pain, either teeth pain or other bodily pain, then of course they can go to a doctor. There's always a refuah. We said there are no gzeres on Chol HaMoed, there's always a refuah on Chol HaMoed, but you're not supposed to be mechavin malachto to schedule something for Yontif if you could avoid it. However, in terms of scheduling things that are medical, either dental or doctors, this is a machlokas. Ramosh and Ryakov says that, again, if there's no pain and nothing's going to get worse, you just have to go for medical, you know, dentals, it's just convenient. You're off for 4 days, you're off for 3 days. So Ramosh and Ryakov say you shouldn't schedule such an appointment. Others do permit, so it's a machlokas achronim. Okay, that was all in terms of Tzorech Yom Tov. Let's now speak about Davar Ha'aved. Davar Ha'aved, let's say you have a leak. And I said you can't call a plumber, right? But what do you mean? If the leak continues, it's going to develop into a bigger leak, and it's going to ruin my carpet, it's going to ruin my walls, and it's going to ruin the, you know, it's going to ruin everything. So Davar Ha'aved is mutter, even Tzorech Ma'isa Uma. So you can call a plumber if there's a leak. Or it's not just that the toilet is stuffed and has to be, whatever, fixed. It's that there's a leak in the house, a leak in the toilet, a leak in the toilet, water's running, and it's going to overflow, and something's dripping, it's going to cause problems because of the davar ha'aved. That's when you're a ma'isa uman. I had a ma'isa last Pesach. We took the kids to Atlantic City for 2 days. Not to gamble, just to go somewhere that's far enough that you think you went away, but close enough that I don't have to drive more than like 2.5 hours. That's like the rule. And while we were there, we had some serious, our car, we took our old minivan because it's bigger, and we had some like the transmission went. But it wasn't just that I couldn't, okay, so transmission went, so what am I going to do? We're not going to Hershey Park? I'm already in Hershey Park. I'm stuck. I can't get home. So what could I do? I could Uber, you know, eight people back to the five towns. That would cost me $500. And I'll still have to fix my car, then I'll have to pay another. So there was that double update. So there, I took the car and had the transmission, whatever work had to be done. As far as it wasn't the transmission, it was the starter. I don't remember what it was. I had that ma'isa u'man work done because then it wasn't just tzorach ha'moed, it was davar ha'aved because of the situation. If it was home, I wouldn't be able to do it if I just wanted to go on a trip. That would not have been permitted. Let's now talk about tzorach ha'rabim. Tzorach ha'rabim doesn't mean that anything for the rabbim is mutter. It means that anything that relates to the guf is mutter. Like a pothole, somebody will trip and hurt their body, that's going to be mutter. There's a problem with the mikvah, that's mutter. There's a problem with the bathrooms, that's mutter. You want to build a beis medrash? Tzorech rabbim, right? Build a shul? That's aser. The heter of tzorech rabbim is only a tzorech rabbim that has some kind of tzorech haguf, some kind of extension of ochel nefesh or bodily application to it. So as funny as it sounds, the shul is not allowed to do work on their sanctuary, they are allowed to do work on their toilets. Fascinating. The Ravid gives a very interesting story, why Chazal permitted Tzorchei Rabim, and he says that if you tell people on a Tuesday in the middle of a work week, guys, we have to do this job for the community, no one's going to do it because no one's available. So therefore, Chazal gave a heter on Chol HaMoed where people are not going to work for themselves and they're available. And if we say, "Oh, guys, it's something that the community needs," then people will avail themselves to do what the community needs. Since anyway, they're not doing their own work. Okay. Any questions about Chol HaMoed? Okay. Yeah.
So Ma'aseh Uman is mutter for Aved or Guf, but not for Chol HaMoed.
Let me rephrase that. Let's talk about one at a time. For a tzorach ha'moed, it's mutter to do a ma'isa hedyot, but it's also to do a ma'isa uman.
Right.
However, if the ma'isa uman is for a tzorach moed, that's a tzorach haguf, like eating, like be able to see with my glasses, like being able to use have a toilet available, like going to a cosmetologist so I look nice for the last days and I have my eyes waxed, my eyebrows waxed, that will be mutter even a tzorach uman because the tzorach, even a ma'isa uman, because ma'isa uman is mutter for tzorach haguf. Davar ha'aved is everything's mutter for davar ha'aved. Yeah.
If the fourth scenario of Surah Rabim is only Surah Agot,
yes,
then isn't it not a distinct?
No, it might not be a Surah Yantif. You don't need to fix it. You don't need to build the bathrooms today. You'll fix the bathrooms 2 weeks from now. It'll be fine. Okay. Do you want to do infertility? Let's do infertility. It's a little bit lighter. I mean, not if. That was very cruel, wasn't it? Okay. So, Rabbi Krohn's shiur about infertility. The first question is when people should start testing. Moshe has a tshuva that says no one should start. You shouldn't start testing for 5 years, which the modern day postmen and doctors would say is an inordinate amount of time, because I guess Moshe was talking about a case where there's complicated. Extracting zera in a very compromising way, and he didn't want to be mad to that unless you really know that people can't have a child. But other poskim say even waiting a year or two is reasonable. And he pointed out you have to sort of know the context. If a couple gets married when the woman's 42 years old, and you're going to wait a year or two, then by then there's you just cut the chance of her being able to have it conceived by 50%. So even a few months might be appropriate for somebody who's a woman who's getting married when she's at that age. The most important question is what is the length of a woman's cycle? Meaning, ovulation happens, a woman, in order to become pregnant, a woman has to ovulate, release an egg, and the zera has to hit the egg within 72 hours. The zera could only be effective 72 hours after it is in the body, and the egg has to be there during that magical period. So let's say, we'll try to present the concept called halachic infertility. Let's talk for now about a woman whose period is 28 days. So if you have a woman has a period of 28 days, ovulation is always going to be 14 days before her next period. So on day 14, before her next period, and since it's a 28-day period, then it's also 14 days after she became Anita. So on day 14, that's where she ovulates. Now, under normal circumstances, that's fine, because let's say she became an Ida 14 days ago. She had 5 days before she could count the Zainakim. Then Zainakim, that's 12. She went to the mikveh after 12 days. So 2 nights after she goes to the mikveh, she will ovulate, and that will be perfect. She'll be able to come pregnant. Baruch Hashem, Mazel Tov. The problem is if a woman has a short cycle. So let's say she has a 25-day cycle. So 14 days before her cycle, she's going to ovulate. So that means it's a 25-day cycle, so 14 days before the next period, that means she's ovulating on day 11. On day 11, she is still Anita. So if she ovulates on day 11, and then she goes to the mikvah 2 days later, by then, this is another point, the egg that ovulates, I believe, has to be fertilized within 24 hours of being released, I believe. After 24 hours, it can't do anything. So if the egg is going to be released on day 11, and she's not going to go to the mikvah until day 12, 13, so 24 hours have passed before the possibility of fertilizing that egg that came out during ovulation, and she basically can, by definition, not become pregnant. So that is what we call, or that's what shouldn't be called, halachic infertility. So there are numerous options to solve that. The simplest is to take a pill, some kind of hormone, or like estrogen, to push the ovulation. Instead of ovulating on day 11, which is her natural cycle, we'll take some estrogen to push the ovulation to be 2 days later, after she goes to the mikvah. That would be a great thing if it works. Alternatively, b'shas hadchak, you could rely on not having to wait the first 5 days, just waiting 4 days, b'shas hadchak, maybe even waiting 3 days, if they also abstain from the last day before the period. I don't want to go into that hilchos nida. It's important to realize the difference between men and women, that men have zera that is continually recreated as long as the man is healthy. A woman starts out with a certain number of eggs at birth, and they diminish as a woman ages. They diminish both in quantity as well as in quality. So therefore, a woman who has what's called premature ovarian failure will have fewer eggs, and at a certain point might run out of eggs at an earlier time. Let's say normally a woman runs out of eggs, I don't know, at 40, whatever. If a woman has this PMF, premature ovarian failure, PMOF or something like that, then she might run out of eggs when she's 27, God forbid, or her eggs might be very low quality as she gets older. So that would be a challenge. Okay, when it comes to zera that is needed, so there's two things that the doctors have to figure out. There's morphology and motility. Morphology is the shape of the zera. Zera has to be able to, it has to have a certain shape that makes it be able to do what it has to do. Motility is its ability to move. Because remember, it has to swim from the entrance of the woman all the way up through the canal, through the vaginal canal, through the cervix, into the womb, and then into the fallopian tube. It's for a little guy like a zera, it's like driving from here to the moon. So if he doesn't move well, if he's not a road runner, then he has poor motility. So the zera will not be able to make that travel, that trip, and therefore the doctors could in the lab they could look it under a microscope and see what the motility is. So the question is how to get that zera for the testing and eventually after the testing to figure out what the problem is to obviously insert into the woman. So here the question is the easiest way a guy would do masturbation if it's doing not for pleasure but for fertility is that mutter? So some say it is. It's not levatala. It's nachiezer, chaimozer, and tzitzilia say it's not levatala. And therefore it's for productive purposes. But Ramosha says that even if we say there's no isav hashchas as zeril, it's not levatala, there's a different isav called niyaf biyadayim. Niyaf biyadayim is still aser, and that's not going to take away the isser to be motzid biyadayim. So, of course, Jews, when we have to test infertility, we'll always check the woman first and do whatever checking up of the woman. If that is exhausted and we don't find any problem with the woman, then we'll go to see what the deal is with the man's needs. So the best way, halachically, even though technically it's not really going to happen, is if they do it, if the husband and wife are together, and if they're together, the woman stands up and lets the zera drip into the cup from her body. That, you know, there's no issa that was done at all. And they'll take it and then run it over to the lab. Obviously, for various reasons, it's not convenient. Number one, because it's affected by having been in her body. Number two, not so much comes out. Number three, how are you going to get from there, wherever you live, to the lab in Midtown Manhattan in enough time that they could analyze it in the time frame in which they have to analyze it? So that's not going to work from a practical perspective, even though halakhically that would be ideal. The second best is to use a condom. Obviously, that has its own thing of hashchas zera neitz and vavonim. But here, it's inside of her body, so it's not as aser. And secondly, and additionally, it can't be a regular condom. It has to be one that's sterile, that doesn't have any other chemicals or spermicides or bacteria that could mess up the analysis that the lab has to do. Some have suggested, Shalazan suggests, maybe if you put a hole in the condom, it makes it a little bit more mutter because some of the zera could go into her body mamish, but apparently that's not suggested. At least Pua doesn't recommend that because the needle might not be sterile and then it's going to rip and it's going to just cause other problems. Lemaisa, Rosh Hashanah, and Willard both are makel against Ramosha, and if absolutely necessary, would allow biadayim if there is no other option, meaning there's already an implantation schedule and she's a nida, so they can't have bia. Like if there's really no other, if pushed against the wall, they might be matia. Now there's two procedures that we have to speak about, IUI and IVF. IUI, intrauterine insemination, is very simple. You take zera, you put it in a syringe, and you shoot it up wherever it has to go to that right perfect place in the fallopian tubes to meet its bashet. And that happens inside the woman. You just take the zera out. Obviously, you have to get the zera, and once you shoot it in, that could be solve the problem of, let's say the zera doesn't have good motility, it doesn't move around, it's small, it has a short tail and can't wag to move fast enough. And IUI, intrauterine insemination, would be great. But if the problem is with the woman, then shooting the zarat won't help because the woman is the woman's issue. Apparently, IUI only improves chance of fertility by 15% or so. So it's not the best. You know, you try a few times. If not, you just move on to IVF. IVF is a much more significant procedure. Again, the zera has to be procured, and then they take eggs from the woman, they take the zera, however it's going to be procured from the man, and they give it to a lab technician, and the lab technician actually injects, physically, takes the zera, the microscopic, and injects it into the egg. They does it a bunch of times, they have a bunch of embryos, and freezes them, and little by little, they'll put them in a few at a time. They'll try to put them in a few at a time, and the first session is very expensive. After that, if it didn't work the first round, they still have those embryos in the lab, in the freezer, they could put them in. It's not as expensive for the next few rounds. Shaila that one could ask, once you have embryos, they could analyze the embryos before they implant them. So you could do pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, PIGD. So could you say, hey, I want a girl, hey, I want a boy, I have a girl, so I need a boy to kind of pre-revu. So could you do that once you have the embryos that you're deciding which ones to implant? So firstly, we want to make sure the ones that you implant are the healthiest ones. But once they are the healthy ones, you want to choose boy or girl, so ask your rabbi if you should do gender selection to decide which embryos to implant. Important to know, let's say you have these embryos. Again, you took the zera from the man, you took the egg from the woman, you're in a lab, you create an embryo, you put it in the freezer. Shabbos morning, the electricity goes out. Are you allowed to be mechallel Shabbos to save the embryos? The answer is no. It does not have a din of life, not even a halach of a fetus, and one cannot save an embryo. Okay, you can sit on, you can take the chair for that. Now, when we have an egg donor, there's a gigantic machlokas if the mother is the woman who provided the eggs. Sometimes you have a woman who has a problem with her eggs. So you're going to have someone else offer the eggs and to a nice prom lady who'll carry the baby. But the lady who gave the eggs might not be Jewish. She was very nice that she offered her eggs. You could try, yeah, thank you. It's very nice that she gave her eggs to this nice Jewish woman who's going to carry the baby and call it her own. But Lamaisa, genetically, it's the biological material of a non-Jewish woman who's the biological mother of this baby. That baby might be a guy and therefore would need giur. Even though it comes out of a mother, it comes out of the womb of a Jewish womb. So there's a maila, perhaps, getting a Jewish egg donor to avoid the problems of giur. What about Shem Yisrael Esacho? So it's not okay. We're not going to talk about that. When you have not a Jewish, not an egg donor, but a zera donor. Let's say you have a man who has a problem producing zera, and they use somebody else's zera. This is a much bigger machlokas. The famous machlokas, the Sam Rebbe and the Chazon Ish, and Reb Moshe Feinstein, Sam Rebbe said, you have a married woman. She's married, Mrs. Friedman is married to Mr. Friedman. You're taking, Mr. Jacobson's Zera and putting it to Mrs. Friedman, that's Eishes Ish. And therefore, we know that Eishes Ish creates Mamzerim. So it's Eishes Ish, it's Gilei Arayis, kids of Mamzer, and it's pretty bad. That's the Sam Rebbe. And Reb Moshe doesn't hold that way. He says there's no Maisa Tasha, there's no Maisa Isser, there's no Bias Isser. It's just the Zera that was implanted, and therefore it's not Ishizish, it's not a Mamzer. But it's better if you use the Zera of a Goy, Reb Moshe says, because this way there won't be any Yichus. Halacha is the child's not Meyuchus, La'achar, the Zera of a Goy. Zirma Susim, Zirma Aslam, and therefore that would also solve the problem of a Mamzeris also. If you use the Zer of a Goy, then the halacha is that the Zer of a Goy is not miyuchas after the one who provided that Zera. Because of a pasuk that says, Zirmas sursim zirmasam. The Zera is like the Zera of a Sus. And therefore, it doesn't sound misyach is back to the Goy. And therefore, there is no father. Literally, there is no father. Halachically, there is no father. And therefore, the kid won't be a mamzer either. Because a mamzer is only if there is a Jewish man and a Jewish woman. So it won't be a shav of mamzer either. Of course, you have to have, there's hashgacha that has to happen to make sure the right eggs, the right zera goes to the right person, taken out and put in the right freezer with the right person. That's something that the organizations provide. in terms of abortion, if a baby is very sick, God forbid, like the Tay-Sachs, you have the gigantic machlokas, what is the status of a fetus? Is it lo tzirtzeh? Rav Moshe holds that to abort a fetus, even if the fetus is very sick, Rav Moshe holds that would be lo tzirtzeh. And the Tzitz Eliezer holds that it's not lo tzirtzeh, and there is the possibility of having an abortion. Those are the halachas that we learned about infertility. Okay, you up for another share? Okay, let's try to do another one if we can. So I think he was saying that nowadays they have a lot of things set into play for government agencies, and nowadays it's not as ma'akev as it might have been previously, because they have you know, the labs are always under camera, but it should be done l'chatfila. Okay, do you want to do safras? Rabbi Mendel is safras and stam, or do you want to do mikros? All together now. Mikros is a little harder, and safras. Yeah? Okay, we'll do the safras. Okay, mikros is a little bit harder. Okay, first thing to know is that a men's mikvah, don't be tovel kelim in a men's mikvah. Men's mikvah is not a real mikvah daraisa, and tefillas kelim is a chiyuv daraisa. So never be tovel your kelim in a men's mikvah. That's first thing. Okay, so now let's get into the halachas of creating a mikvah. If you have, we know that the Torah tells us that a mikvah is a bar of mayim. So you have rainwater that gather in a puddle, so that's called a mikvah, if it's big enough. What happens when you want to create other waters that also have the status of a mikvah, but they're not rainwater? So then we're going to find two primary ways to be machshir non-rainwater to make it into rainwater. And those are hashaka and hazra or zriya. Two different kinds of boros, two different kinds of kasher water, and each one's going to have milas and chesronas, and that's what we're going to talk about first. So, actually, we're not going to talk about that yet. We'll talk about that soon. Let's first talk about a mikvah and a mayan. Torah talks about a mayan. There are different halachas that apply to each. A mikvah must be ashborin, must be still water, not flowing water. Zochalin will be pasal. Flowing water will be pasal in a mikvah. So therefore, if you have a mikvah that has a crack that is flowing out of the crack a certain volume per day, that will be pasal. So that's why, even if you have a kosher mikvah that was built, you have to make sure that there are no cracks in it, and it has to maintain as the community maintains its mikvah. That's one halacha of a mikvah. Another halacha of a mikvah, which we all know, is it has to have 40 se'ah of size. Now, a mayan has the two opposite of those halachas. If it's a natural spring, water coming out of the ground, so a mayan is mitar b'zelchalim, the running water is kosher, and a mayan is mitar b'kol shehu. So, if you have a tiny little spring that is running somewhere, and you want to put a fork in a tiny running spring that's coming out of the rocks, you could dip your tiny little fork in that tiny little spring, even though it's running, and even though it's not 40 sa'ah. Now, the Gra says these two halachas are okay. We're not going to go into that. The Mishnah says explicitly that an ocean has a din of a mayan, and therefore, even though the ocean is rushing to and fro, it is kosher to be tovelin. A river and a lake is much more complicated. A river and a lake is flowing. So if the waters in a river or the waters in a lake were accumulated by rain, it's rainwater, not mayan water, not spring water. If it's rainwater, so then it has a din of a mikvah, and it has to be 40 sa, okay, you have 40 sa, but it has to be still water. If it's running, if the lake has a flow out place that many of the camps have, you know, lake, and but there's also, if you go around, you know, to the middle of the forest, you see that the lake runs out somewhere else, it's flowing outwards. There's an outlet to the lake. Or if it's a river, definitely is running. So if it's rainwater, that is the majority of the water in this river, then that's going to be pasul because rainwater is pasul b'zochalin. However, the Gemara Nedarim has the following machlokas. One opinion says, I think it's Rav, says that you have to look and see what happens during the different seasons. Let's say during the dry season, the river dries up. And during, you know, after the winter and the spring, there's a lot of water there. Like in Eretz Yisrael, this is lots of places. What does that show? It shows that the water in this body is from the rain. If it's from the rain, then it's going to be pasul because it's rainwater that's flowing. That's pasul. If during the dry season there's still water running there, like at En Gedi, then you know that it's not rainwater, rather it's spring water, and then it'll be kosher if it's flowing, because Mayan is kosher bezochalim. That's Rav. Shmuel says every rain, every river is kosher, because Nahar Mikipi Misparich, meaning every raindrop that falls from the top has two raindrops that come up from the bottom. How does that work in science? I don't know, but that's what Shmuel says, and we love Shmuel. So the Shulchan Aruch doesn't love Shmuel. The Shulchan Aruch says, no, you have to look at what the majority of the water is. If the majority of the water is indeed from rain, and therefore it gets dried up during the dry season, then you can't be tovel in such a river ever, because it's from rain. But the Ramah has a Yesh Mekilin, the Maharik, that says that if there are no mikvahs around, you could rely on that opinion of Shmuel that every single river, yeah, you think it has mostly rainwater, but if you see, you know, 100,000 gallons of rainwater, there must be 200,000 gallons of water that came from below, somehow, Shmuel holds, and you could rely on that opinion of Shmuel. Rabbi Avadya points out that kula in the Ramah is from the Maharik. Maharik was Sfardi. And therefore, B'shas Adchak, says Rabbi Avadya, even Sfardim could rely on that kula that the Ramah cites, that B'shas Adchak, I had a shayla from a girl in Stern, she's a Talmidah in the JSS, in the beginners program. Her father, wealthy young lady, wealthy family, they have a house in Telluride, like Vail. They have a house in Vail, and her father was making a Christmas party. And the Christmas party, they got new kelim. So she wanted to know if she could be Tovel, it's a great shayla, if she could be Tovel, the new kelim, for her father's Christmas party in the river in Telluride. That was a shayla. What's the psak? I don't think there's so many mikvahs in Telluride. It's supposed to be beautiful and very expensive, but they're not so many mikvahs there. And therefore, based on this Ramah, Seb Shasat Chak, she could rely on this Ramah, that every river somehow has, even though it might be a rainwater river, not necessarily a spring river, it was Christmas time, so it was, you couldn't tell if it's rain or not, because there's lots of water everywhere. So even if it would have been possibly from rain, and would have theoretically been possible, nevertheless, we could rely on Shmuel that whatever rain water is there, there's more water that comes from below that makes it kosher. Yeah.
How far?
Meaning, what's a shasat chak? The Rav has to decide what's considered a shasat chak. Other factors would, you know, play into play. If I told her that, I'm sorry, it doesn't work, so she'd say, okay, they'll just use, you know, the Christmas party will must go on, right? So they won't tell me the camera. So that would be shasat chak. If the other option was that they'll use paper, so it wouldn't be a shas b'chad. It depends on the situation you have to evaluate. Okay, now let's talk about how to be makshir waters. Two ways, either hashaka or zriya. Let's explain what hashaka is. Hashaka is probably, according to one opinion, means kissing, like in a shikah. So you take a mikvah, take a bar that's full of rainwater, and you open up a little hole. That's the size of Shofaris Hanod. I don't really know. Shofaris Hanod is the size of two fingers going around. So it's this size. What is that, like a cubic inch or so? Or the fist, two fingers, a fist? I don't remember. I think it's a tefach. Or two rimon. I don't remember.
It's two or something.
Two fingers? Okay. So two fingers in three directions, meaning up, down. I'm sorry. this way. And whatever, you got it. Three-dimensional, two fingers, three cubic, two fingers. So that would really be a volume of 2 times 2 times 2, 8 cubic fingers. So that hole of 8 cubic fingers, what we'll call Shofaris Hanod, has to be between this bathtub and this bar of Mayim Mei Geshamim. And when I open up the plug, they kiss, and now I have two kosher mikvahs, and she can be tovel in one of them, either one, even in the bathtub, even after it's plugged in. That is the simple understanding. However, what if we leave it plugged up, There are some. The Shach, for example, is machmir, that the you can only be tovel in the bathtub if it's while that connection is still open to the Megah Shaman. And if the plug is plugged up right now, you can leave it plugged up a lot of the time, but at least when the woman goes in it or the kelim go in it, the plug has to be open, connecting the bathtub where the base tevila is called, the Baal called the bathtub, to the place where the Megah Shaman is. That's the Shach. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't hold that way. The Shulchan Aruch holds that as long as they once connected, they once kissed, the waters have been muhukshar and can be used. But this Shach is for which we try to be machmir lechatchila, to have a nekev open during the tevila. That's Hashaka. You'll see that that's going to cause complications in a minute, that Shach. But now let's talk about Zriya. Zriya is I have a place of Megah Shamim, and I'm not going to connect it to anything else. I'm just going to turn on a tap right on top of this Megah Shamim. The Megah Shamim will overflow and overflow into another bar, into what we'll call the bar tefillah, into the bathtub. So it was planted, tap opened up, the faucet planted the water as if it were the tap water into the kosher mikvah, and it was Zoreya, it planted this faucet water into the mikvah, kosher mikvah, and it overflowed into the bathtub. That once it did that, you don't have to connect. It was planted in the mikveh. Now that it overflowed into the next tub, it's kosher. The next tub doesn't have to be connected anymore because it was already planted. It became as if it were batel to the mikveh that you put it in, and now it turned into mikveh water by having been planted there. Now that it flows into the new place, it's going to be kosher mikveh water, and you don't have to be worried about both are kosher mikvahs. You don't have to worry. There's no plug. It already became. It became a mikvah. So if you do Zriya, you don't need Hashaka anymore. There is a problem. The problem is that when they clean out the bathtub and they suck out all the water, sometimes there's some technical problems which we're not going to get into. A problem with Zriya is that we mentioned that flowing water is problematic. Okay, I don't want to get into that either. Yeah. Some hold that if I pour the water from the tap into the Megah Shamim and it flows into the next one, you're creating a mikvah with zechila, with flowing water. And some poskim hold, what do you mean? How could zochalin, if everything is flowing at the same time, how could that be metaher the she'uvim? Because remember, if I pour water into the Megah Shamim, and as the water is coming in and overflowing into the next one, what's flowing into the next one? A mikvah that is, mikvah, rainwater that is flowing. That means the mikvah that I pour the water into, to be as Zoreya, the tap water is into, is itself a mikvah that is flowing. That's called a pasul mikvah. So I just turned the faucet into the Megah Shamim, and by doing that, made it start flowing. By making this first mikvah flow, that automatically made it a pasul mikvah. So how could that pasul mikvah be machshir the water is in the bathtub? So that's a problem with Zriya. So a solution would be to pour the water into the first mikvah and not let it flow out simultaneously. And then after you put the waters into the mikvah, it becomes kosher. Then, now that the mikvah has become kosher, now that the mikvah was kosher, and you put the waters into your mazriya, the new waters, the tap waters, into this bar of Megah Shamim, then open up a hole on the side and let it flow into the next bar, into the bathtub, and the mikveh has already been kosherized. The new waters have already been kosherized, and when it flows into the bathtub, you already had a kosher mikveh, and now you have kosher mikveh water going into the bathtub, and that would be okay. That is the problem. Again, so the problem with Zriya is that there's going to be a problem with Zochalin. The problem with Hashaka is I mentioned the Shach earlier, that you have to have the Hashaka happening as she's Tovelas, or as the Kelim are Tovelim,
in the bathtub, it has to be connected to the make a shamu. Sometimes that plug is closed. Sometimes they just forget to open the plug. And according to the shach, you don't have the connection right now. It's going to be a problem. So what they try to sometimes do is they try to have a me hashak, a bar hashaka and a bar zriya. I'm not going to get into the configurations on the board. You could have hashaka and a zriya. Each one will solve the other's problem. To finish off this shir, there's another point, and that is the sugya of nasan sa v'natal sa. The Mishnah says that if you take oranges, you pour, let's say you have a mikvah 40 sa, you take out one sa of water, let me rephrase that, you put in a sa of oranges and take out a sa of water. Now it's 39 and 1, right? Not really, because it's a little bit diluted. It's 39.1 and 0.9. Then if you do it a number of times, you pour orange juice in and take some of the mixture of mikvah out. Put more orange juice in, take some of the mikvah out. Nasan sa v'natal sa. You always have to have rov water. You always have to have rov water to be kosher. Now, some hold that that's only by orange juice, and some hold that that's true by she'uvim. She'uvim means that if you have megishamim and you're going to pour water into it, at some point the displacement of the megishamim will be displaced, and the majority of the water that you're left with is going to be shuvim water from the tap. At some point, that's going to happen. If you do it for enough days, enough months, you're going to lose your core megishamim and not have a row of megishamim left in your mikvah because you put a lot of water in, which then went over there, and I said to hashaka. Even when you have hashaka, the waters travel back and forth. So the original megishamim is going to get lost. So that is going to be a problem if you want to have the original megishamim stay there. So the Rebbe Rishab, the first of the Rebbe, suggested the following. I'm sorry, the fifth of the Baruch Rebbe suggested the following. He suggested making a bor al gabei bor. What you'll do is, this is called a Hasid Chabad mikvah. Cold water is more dense and therefore stays in the bottom. Make a shamim, put it down in the basement. Put a board on top of that. Make a hole in the board, and on top of that board, put nice warm water that the ladies and the kelim will like to be tovel in. That's going to be the bathtub. Now that water is warm, so therefore that warm water is going to stay up. The cold megashom is going to stay down, and they're not going to really, flow one to the other because cold water is more dense. It's going to stay on the bottom. Water, hot water, where the bathtub is above it. Although they're connected to a shofres hanod hole, their water are still going to stay separate, even though there's a hole that would allow intermingling, but the density of the waters don't allow the intermingling because the cold stays on the bottom and the warm stays on top. And that is a suggestion to keep your megishamim intact. The problem with that is that there is a halacha called katafris enochibur, which means that a water that has a water next to each other is connected. But water that flows is not considered connected. So your top one and your bottom one isn't connected because there's a connection through a vertical component. That's called a katafris. And therefore, they suggest different suggestions, including having a bor al gabei bor with a bor next to it, and you end up any new modern mikvah in a city that has a sizable Jewish community usually ends up having three boros all connected. You have a bathtub that is connected to a al gabei bor, is also connected to get the chabad, the chabad at Maila, which is also connected to bor hashaka, which is also connected to bor zriya, to have all the different chumras. Finally, one last chumrah, and that is that it's not a chumrah, that when we want to solve the problem of she'uvim, there's a halacha called hamshacha. Hamshacha is that if you run, let's say you have mayim she'uvim, and you pour it, not into the bar, but you pour it on the ground, and it has a runway of 3 tefachim before it falls into the bar, that runway of 3 tefachim takes off at least the psil d'oraisa that she'uvim might have, because it had this runway to be nimshach on. It had this runway to go down. Once you have 3 tefachim of a runway, before it falls into the bar, you took away at least the deraisa. So we also, when we ever have water from a tap that's going, which is she'uvim, because in the water system there are, let's say, kibul, there are valves and pumps and things that have a base kibble, so the water is shuvim. So as we pour the tap water, we don't pour tap water directly into a mikvah. We pour the tap water on the ground, on a ledge. It goes through tzvachim and then plops into the mikvah to at least take away some level of iser shuvim before it falls out. Okay, that was the halacha mikvahs. We did the harder shiurim, and Bez Hashem, we'll find the time to do the rest of shiurim on Zoom of the next few days.